that's the whole thing for me. I'm such a believer in this idea that, you know, why are we giving all our time and energy and talent and heart and soul to something that doesn't have some deep meaning to us, and it doesn't actually capture the best we have to offer? And to me, that's what purpose is all about, is to really get clear about the dent in the universe an organization wants to make, and create an environment inside the organization where people can find an overlap between their personal purpose and the organization's purpose. And that's when magic happens.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Emotional Intelligence Podcast, a podcast where we explore the intersection of emotional intelligence and leadership. And whether you're a seasoned executive or just starting out in your leadership journey, we're going to share practical tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you develop your emotional intelligence and achieve your goals. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take your leadership skills to the next level. I'm Ismail.
And I'm Samir.
Greetings, all. Today, we have the honor of hosting a remarkable guest who's dedicated a big chunk of his life to understanding the intricate dynamics of the modern workplace. Today, we're going to chat with Stephen Fitzgerald. He's the co-founder and president of Habanero Consulting, which is based in Vancouver, Canada. Stephen's invested countless hours into really unraveling the mysteries behind human motivation and the art of building successful teams in thriving organizations. And he's really someone that people turn to for his unique ability to challenge the status quo and really inspire transformative change. I've had the pleasure of knowing Stephen for 15 years, and I've actually worked for Habanero early on in my career. And today we've got the privilege of delving into the mind of this exceptional leader to discuss the topics today, which are purpose and psychological safety.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for joining us. We really appreciate it. And you're our inaugural guest on the podcast, so we're really excited.
It's a real honor. I'm thrilled to be your first guest.
Why don't we just start it off by telling us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about Habanero, and the world that you live in.
Yeah, so I have been, heavily engaged in this thing called Habanero for about 27 and a half years now. And we started our life early on as a technology-related organization focused on this idea that there is a role for technology to play in terms of how individuals and groups of people worked and the experiences they had in the workplace. So, you know, it was an era when internet technology was a brand new thing. And over that time, we started out of the gates being very purpose-oriented as an organization, really focused on this idea of thinking that we had an opportunity to leverage what we could do to actually create workplaces where people could have better, not just better career experiences, but better life experiences. And over the years, over the decades, we've evolved our offering. And I really think of us as an employee experience company. So we put our hands around culture, what it's like from a culture point of view, the belief systems in organizations, the real drivers of cultures like purpose and values and those cultural norms that really matter for people, and all the way to some of the more practical things that really impact people's day-to-day experiences. So technology, particularly the technology people use to connect and share and understand what's going on in the organization, intranets and those communications tools inside the organization. So it's kind of an interesting thing in that, and I would say an unusual thing that we're really a culture and technology organization, not a technology organization bolting on culture to say we can support change, or not a culture organization trying to be hip with technology bits to it. Like, we've really grown up in those two areas. It's really what we are. It's sometimes a struggle for the world to understand us, because, you know, organizations don't buy things that way and they're not organized that way necessarily, but we believe being an expert in both of those things is a really important differentiator that will be more greatly appreciated as the world evolves.
It's super, super unique. And I can understand why, you know, you guys are kind of changing the way people think about work. And you talk about culture and purpose, and, you know, I'd love to hear more about not only how you guys go into companies and consult on those topics, but I'd love to hear more about how you've developed a culture and a purpose at Habanero and what that looks like.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, that's the whole thing for me. I'm such a believer in this idea that, you know, why are we giving all our time and energy and talent and heart and soul to something that doesn't have some deep meaning to us, and it doesn't actually capture the best we have to offer? And to me, that's what purpose is all about, is to really get clear about the dent in the universe an organization wants to make, and create an environment inside the organization where people can find an overlap between their personal purpose and the organization's purpose. And that's when magic happens. I think that's when performance goes up in all levels in terms of organizational performance, but performance for individuals in the organization, like life performance and performance for clients. And so this is, for us, it's something that we, like I mentioned earlier, it's something we started thinking about early on. And it's an aspect of our organization that is really deeply embedded in everything we think about and how we talk about the organization, all the decisions we make. And a lot of purpose-driven organizations, they, you know, you can hear the words of the purpose coming up a lot. And I almost feel like we're post that era. We don't generally utter the purpose statement phrase very much, because we know we're always talking about it. And it's a constant element in how we view the world, how we think about how we make sense of what matters, make sense of the successes and the failures, and it gives context to everything we do. So it's really the kind of central guiding North Star for everything that happens in our company.
It sounds like Habanero was 27 years ahead of its time, in the sense that what we're hearing a lot out in the workplace now is the people coming into the workforce, they want to know the type of company they're working for. What is their purpose? What is the social structure? What is the company accomplishing, rather than, hey, how much money can I make, and what's the highest I can go up in the organization or hierarchically?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, when you talk about Habanero's purpose, is it something you bundle into like a few sentences, or is it something that's just ingrained in the company as a whole?
I mean, both. So we have a purpose statement, and we exist to help, or are passionate about helping people and organizations thrive. But that's a mnemonic. That is a mnemonic. That's a wayfinding system for people, right? It's really important to differentiate the purpose statement, which is a label, and the idea of purpose and the clarity of it. That's really what matters. So that's the part that's living all the time. And like anything else, us as individuals, the more we mature and the more we learn about ourselves, the more we put work into learning about ourselves, it's the same for organizations, the more sophisticated our understanding of these big ideas like purpose and values, and the more that we can live them in a more natural way that really has an impact on how we show up and the relationships we develop and our authenticity and things like that.
In a previous conversation, you know, as we were getting to know each other, something that the couple of things you had brought up that I'd love to get a little bit more information on was a three bubble Venn diagram.
Yeah. So what we were talking about is, okay, so this is another tangent. We'll go down this road. So we happen to be a lattice organization, which is different than a hierarchy. The whole design thesis behind a lattice organization is that it promotes collaboration across the enterprise. It removes the friction associated with connecting with people, and removes any idea of, you know, my next career step is moving up the hierarchy versus actually developing myself in the ways that are best for me. And so the Venn diagram is every person in Habanero has a career coach, and 100% of, they're not their manager, but the 100% of their job is to help that person stay in the sweet spot between what's best for them and their career, what's best for Habanero, and what's best for our clients. So that's the Venn diagram you're referring to. And so it's this whole idea of if you get in that mode, everyone eventually starts building a custom career path that helps the company succeed, helps our clients succeed. But most importantly for them, it allows them to explore the things that really matter to them to have an amazing career and have an amazing career in a way that fuels a great life. And that's to me the magic in all this is to try and create that opportunity.
So does that go hand in hand with being, say, a purpose-driven organization? Or can those be separated from each other, meaning your lattice type structure or a purpose-driven organization?
That is a great question. You don't need to be a lattice to be a purpose-driven organization. And just to be really clear, there's a difference between a purposeful organization and a purpose-driven organization. So we do a lot of work with this amazing organization called the Dr. Peter AIDS Center. It's a world-renowned organization that started at the beginning of the AIDS crisis as a hospice, but has become this amazing place that deals with people with the most complex care scenarios, both healthcare, socially, security, all these different aspects. So they bring these people in these very complicated situations, and they create an environment where those people can lead more successful lives. And if you walk in there, you literally see the people whose lives they're saving. It's very evident what's going on there. There's no mistaking it. Yet, we've worked with them in the past to help them get clear about what their purpose is and get more articulate about it and get more clear about it. And so you can see the difference in the organization now that they've moved from the absolute clarity of you know, the purposefulness of walking around, seeing what's happening, and you just need to go in there and soak it in, and you've got it in 30 seconds. But now they have this other level of clarity, and they can be much more articulate about their reason for being, why they exist. And when they're more articulate about that, they create a platform for their employees, the people that work there, and other stakeholders, and even the participants that take advantage of the organization to find more of themselves in the organization and build a deeper connection and build like better career experiences for them. So that's where that synergy comes from. So being purposeful provides, you know, a higher level, another gear for organizations. Being purpose-driven is a whole other step beyond that in terms of that next level of performance, finding that new gear.
A question that pops up for me, Stephen, just kind of managing teams and being part of a hierarchy at my organization that's very clear and laid out in a very traditional way. The first question that pops up in my mind is like accountability, right? Like, how do you guys hold people accountable in like sort of a flat organization? Because I think people are interested in hearing about that. Like, at a certain point in time, you have to get somebody to commit to doing something and not just rely on, oh, they'll do it because they just it's best for them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I just want to hear your thoughts on that and how you guys attack those kind of situations.
Yeah. It's a great topic. I was spending some time with the person who leads employee experience at Habanero yesterday. We were talking about this exact thing. And it's really about our expectation for performance. What does performance look like? And for Habanero, because we're primarily a professional services business model, and we're very project-based. We do have a product group in our company too, actually two different product groups. So getting clear about how people come together and form, whether it's a product team or a project team, what their mandate is, what performance and success looks like, is part of the foundation. And if you throw into that, you know, psychological safety and trust and openness, that those teams hold each other to account. And so when it's one thing to sit in a, you know, at a position of authority in an organization and look down and try and identify who's not cutting it and, you know, lean in on them and hold them to account for performance. But man, it's a whole other level when you're on a team and you're interdependent and you're relying on each other and your teammates saying, you're letting me down. This isn't working. So the key is to create the culture where we can give that feedback to each other, where we can support each other when we're not holding our end of the bargain up. And to me, that's real accountability, right? You're on the basketball court and the person's not, you know, it's, who knows that the most? The people on the court. Like it's really, everyone feels that on the team. And so we try as much as we can to use that as our main source of understanding how people, what accountability looks like, how people are doing with respect to their what they need to be doing to be successful, with their team to be successful. And yes, we support that with our systems and you know, other controls and other ways of looking at it. And you know, I hate to use this word, even a little bit of governance around those things. But it's don't tell anyone at Habanero I said that. But it's really about getting to that team level, to the people who know. And first of all, supporting them to hold each other accountable. And when that fails, because it sometimes is hard, there's reasons, then finding ways so you spot it and you can step in and you can support. And not support by coming in as the boss, but support first by helping them hold each other accountable.
Tools and ways of holding people accountable. Like, okay, yeah. I gotcha.
And sometimes that doesn't work either. And people need to, people need more direct support to hold someone accountable. A related topic is, what is it? How do you get to the point where you realize that someone doesn't belong in the organization and they have to move on? And so first of all, I have this, this dream that we have created this environment where our ability to hold people to account and have clear, open expectations and work towards them and support development, and is so clear and everyone's so clear about their performance that, if it's time for someone to move away from Habanero, there's absolutely no difference whether it's their decision or someone in Habanero's decision first, because everyone's working towards one well understood outcome that we all understand is better for that person and better for Habanero. And so the world where, you know, you get canned by your boss and it's a surprise, like we've worked so hard to evolve from that world where, you know, Ismail, we're concerned about your ability to show up in this job and meet the requirements of the job. And we really want to start working with you. And then just sort of keep developing. And then get clear about what it means to be successful in these different layers of kind of interventions to really help someone be successful. We're not perfect there, but we work really hard on this idea that, when someone goes, we really want everyone to feel good about it. Like my dream is, we're not here yet. My dream is that, you know, when someone lands some cool job and they move on and everyone takes them out for beer and it's a celebration. Wow, we're so psyched for you. It wouldn't it be cool if anyone who ever left Habanero, there was that exact same vibe. And I think that to me, that's a symptom of an elevated approach to performance management and accountability. We don't call it performance management because I find that a really demeaning and overly parental kind of term in my mind. But
what do you call it?
We still call it career coaching. We call it coaching.
For you to be successful, for this vision to be successful, it does require the right people, which means that some of the people that come in end up leaving because for this exact reason that we talked about, which you're not, like, your ideal state isn't there, of course, right? But still, people come and go. So you find this right mix of people that make up the organization. So I feel like you're working towards something, obviously, in the ethos of the company. Things like psychological safety are embedded, they're discussed, they're talked about. But that's not the case in every organization. I think it's something that's becoming, well, it's already very apparent, but it's picking up speed and steam. And so what are your thoughts around psychological safety and how organizations get to that point, or how can they, start making their people feel safe? What are some of the steps that organizations have to go through?
Okay. So I'm going to come at this in a slightly more theoretical and maybe less practical way, but I talked about purpose and organizational purpose, which is a, you know, part of addressing a bit of a meaning crisis that's happening in the world. I also think there's a, what I'm observing post COVID in particular is, I mean, this is the most significant change in the human being's relationship with work, you know, since maybe the Industrial Revolution. This is big. This is really big. And what I'm observing is there's a, like an identity crisis for a lot of leaders. So
big from an opportunity or big from actual things that have happened?
Both. Yeah. Great question. So imagine you've lived your whole career, 27 years being the boss and, you know, you, everything that has helped you be successful in your role, you know, often driven by privilege for, you know, but we'll just leave that alone for a second. All the things that a lot of the things that helped you be successful in your role and maintain that success and gave you this, like this moat around your success is sort of eroded in by things like hybrid work and the gig economy and, you know, people moving around, the balance of power shifted from employers to employees. There's a whole bunch of things going on, a whole bunch of dynamics. And that's really threatening for a lot of leaders who, and, you know, they're just human beings. This isn't me shaming anyone. But a lot of decisions that are being made right now are being made subconsciously in effort to hold on to that authority and power base that people have. And so as you're talking about, you're asking about psychological safety and trust. We're in trouble trying to develop that if the leaders in the organization can't really be authentic and sort of figure out how and why they're showing up and making the decisions they're making. And I just see a lot of leaders, again, human beings going through something really tough. They're struggling to make authentic decisions. The number of organizations I've seen that have gone out, figured out, we have this strategy for flexible work. And then one day on Monday, they send a note to the whole company saying, that's it. Everyone's in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm at it. And in the very tiny pessimistic side of my brain, I'm like, you are used to like stepping out of your office and getting a crowd of people around you that will listen to you tell a story and then going back in and coming out 10 minutes later and telling five people what to do. And it's, you're like the lion on the savannah, like in, and you're not that way if everyone's at home. And so there, I'm off on a tangent right now, but I do think this is a very, current issue related to creating psychologically safe environments, because their leaders are a little bit, not a little bit, I think leaders are impaired in their ability to show up authentically, and that starts to degrade safety in a culture. And that's one element. I'm just picking on one element.
I see leaders waffling because they, you know, when things are going a little bit differently than they were pre-pandemic, they need to pinpoint, you know, what's causing this. And it's like, that's the easy scapegoat, right? Like, the people aren't in the office, production's down, revenue is down because production's down, profits are down. And it's like, let's get these people back in the office. So as far as like from your perspective, Stephen, how has psychological safety changed pre-pandemic when folks were in the office to how does it look in a remote environment? And then a follow-up to that is, how can a company know whether there is psychological safety within their organization? Like, mm-hmm. What are some of those telltale signs that you see as you go and consult with other firms to help them understand whether their people even feel safe?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, one thing that's interesting since the pandemic with respect to the air quotes future of work is that I actually believe you could have any point of view you wanted, and you can find data and a graph from some organization to support your argument. This is the best sort of decision-based evidence-making environment I've ever seen. It's quite something. But my read on all the research on post-pandemic psychological safety is remote work is better for people with disabilities, women, people of color, they face less microaggressions. It evens things out. It actually makes it harder to micromanage people, which is a major irritant for psychological safety and respect and other things. And it forces managers to manage in a different style. And even without any training or support from their organization or any conscious evolution of the manager, they tend to show up a little better when people are remote. And so that's not a rule in every single case, but there's quite a bit of research that I think is quite compelling that supports that argument. So that's one of the elements of all this. And it's interesting in an environment where we've faced so many almost like existential threats to our species and there's just been a lot going on to be worried about as a human being. Through the pandemic, we've seen leaders show up in more empathetic ways, being more realistic, being vulnerable. There's been a real rise in leader vulnerability. And there are some organizations that are the pendulum swinging back, and there's been some, Ismail and I talked about this a little while ago, there's been some, I think, really damaging negative articles about, oh, that's all gone, your nice guy boss is gone, he's going to be terrible again. And I just find that so discouraging. But I believe that a lot of that, the lessons of leaders showing up to be vulnerable, opening the door to those kind of conversations, I think that's a change that's going to last to a certain extent. And I think that matters. And it's allowed people all across the organization to be vulnerable. How much more do you talk about mental health than you did before? And even just the understanding of what burnout is and there's a whole bunch of progress we've made, all up, just understanding a lot of these factors that really make can make it really hard for people or make it make work really wonderful for people. So I think we've learned a lot in a lot of really important areas. I'm obviously a very optimistic person and I choose to see the half full of a lot of this, but these are the green shoots to build on. There's real things there to build on that I think are important and valuable in organizations. So that's your first question, Samir. Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the second question, I wanted to build on that just slightly. Pre-pandemic, I was a 5-day-a-week train commuter downtown and really just part of the rat race, the grind of that commute. And I remember when, we all were sent home for 2 weeks, we were going to all be home for 2 weeks, but like getting on calls every morning with my team, 8:30 AM, just check in and just asking people like, how are you? Like, are you okay? Like, and the way the walls came down of people, those people who are like, yeah, I'm really scared. Like my grandma has this illness or my mom is immunocompromised. And I feel like those walls that came down, they still stick with us today. Like 3 years later, we're still having those same conversations, even though they're not even really related to COVID, but somebody feels a lot more comfortable telling me that, hey, I'm going through this, or a family member is going through this. And I'm a lot more empathetic than I once was because we all went through something so, crazy together. And so, and I think that that's really going to have a lasting impact on just the way that we communicate and the way that we just work with others, So
I love that.
One of the things that I've noticed is not only have I built different relationships with the people that work for me or that I work with, but I know actually more about them. So I know about their kids. Oh, they're in this sport. So you're curious, you're following along in their lives. And that's just also carried over, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that I really noticed, this is, I think, very much so in hindsight, is is this having to be vulnerable was a huge opportunity for people who wanted to be vulnerable and couldn't be because there was no space for that. but and also became a huge risk for those people who did not or cannot be vulnerable. And that is showing up very apparently, very clearly, because you have people choosing where they want to work, who they want to work with, based on just some of the outcomes. And maybe they don't call it vulnerability, but the outcome of that, how people show up when being vulnerable or not, people are choosing where to work and who they want to work with because of that.
Yeah. Hallelujah. I mean, how amazing is that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that was there in back people's minds, and it was more of a hope, like, oh, I hope my manager's great. I hope, but now you're like, either it's there or it's not, and you can make that choice and feel confident behind it. And that's something that's really fascinating for me. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you want to stay updated on all the latest content and behind the scenes action, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and several other places by using the link in the show notes. And if it's not too much trouble, we'd love for you to leave a review and share this episode with some of your friends. Your support means everything to us, and we can't wait to connect with you online. Now, let's get back to the show.
So the thing that pops in my head, and I'm going to come back to something Samir was saying that, but so here's something that I just would love people to reflect on, is there's a lot that's going on right now in the world that, you know, people are sort of, there's hand wringing about. So one of them is the implication of, particularly in North America in general, but in Canada, we have the highest working age that Stats Canada has ever measured. So retirements are at an all-time high, and it's going to increase. We have a net negative population growth, but we're growing quickly through immigration. So there's a lot of people coming in trying to figure out where their skills fit in the economy. We have a ratio of available jobs to unemployed people of 1.1, which is incredibly low. So it is an employee's market. And there's been lots of said about organizations, you know, in the tech sector laying off lots of people. But the truth is, compared to most times in living memory or in generations, like, people can go and find jobs that are fit for them, and they are. So there's the environment, but there's also what people are doing. So people are Canada happens to be the fourth highest turnover rate in the planet for people leaving work and going elsewhere, and the United States is not that far behind. And so there's a lot of like, oh my God, we have to hire people, we're losing all this, all this expertise is draining out. But if you step back and you just like think about this at a different level, a different elevation, people, it's not easy to leave a job. The path of least resistance isn't to build a resume, go look for a job. Like, that's a deeply vulnerable, difficult thing to do. And so the people who are changing jobs, they're freaking heroes. And this is why, because the more people move in the economy with the optimism of finding something that's a better fit for them, the more they're in a job and a role and an environment and a culture where they can thrive, the more that they produce and make better lives for themselves and for the people around them, and the more value they create. And it, you know, look, you get it, that there's a real multiplying effect of all this. And if we get away from worrying about the cost of retraining people or onboarding, and we just think about, oh my God, imagine if my whole organization is full of people who only wanted to be here, they loved what they did, and they are a perfect fit for this organization, how powerful would we be then? So, I mean, we need to think about some of these things at a different level and reframe them. And this idea of the hand-wringing and complaining about turnover, yeah, I get it. It's difficult and it's can be costly, but I think there's a prize in it for us. And if we look at it that way, we'll make different decisions about our employee value proposition, employer branding, how we show up in the market, how we recruit, how we talk to candidates, how we talk to employees, and the experiences we create. And I think there's a whole bunch of things like that right now where the the world has a tendency to look at things as negative ideas, but there's a really deeper, more significant, important upside to it.
That is fascinating. That is amazing. I'm curious, how does Habanero, or maybe you personally, if you are looking for someone, how do you present yourself as a recruiter, as a company to the public? Is there anything unique that you do?
I don't know if it's so unique. Like, you know, this is all under the umbrella of employer brand. We're very clear about our employer value proposition, which is kind of the foundation of an employer brand. We work very hard to more or less market our roles in a way that's super authentic and clear. You know, we're a very usability-oriented company. So we want to write those things in a way that's really super clear to people. It just so happens that in the last 13 years, the Great Place to Work Institute has said we're the number one place to work in Canada 4 times. And we've been in the top 5, I think 11 times and all that. So we have a very strong reputation, which I'm very, very, very proud of, which helps a lot. But I don't think I don't know. It's a great question. I don't know if we do anything extraordinarily different.
Essentially, you're following your purpose. You're purpose driven. The company speaks for itself by way of the work they produce, and then of course that multiplies itself in, I guess, things like awards, such as the best place to work in a country, right? In a whole country. So that's got to mean something. So there's nothing. It you're starting somewhere foundational. And it's rippling its way up because you're saying that's for the last 13 years, but the company has been around for 27. So it was taking time to build up to that slowly. And now essentially it's an engine feeding itself.
I like that. I'll take that. That's my answer.
One thing, Stephen, I wanted to get back to a question. How can a company determine whether their people feel safe? And so the companies that you go and consult with, is that something, is there a way you analyze or look at a company to understand if the folks and the teams, if psychological safety exists?
Yeah. So I think this is a really, really, really crucial question. And I really feel it's something that a lot of organizations don't really have a handle on. So I want to talk about it at the enterprise level, at this kind of the system level. Most organizations, so the term is employee listening. So their employee listening strategy is they have an annual survey. And don't get me wrong, surveys, you can learn a lot from a survey, but a survey is, I have some hypotheses about what's going on, what are people's experiences are and what's happening in our culture. And I'm going to use those hypotheses to generate a series of questions to test my hypotheses. So surveys are really handy for quick insight, testing your hypotheses across a broad spectrum of the organization, really efficient. They're not very good at discovery and learning new things. And they're not very good at getting into difficult, complex ideas. So safety is really interesting. You can be in some really hostile environments, and if those people have been in that environment for a long time, you know, like asking a fish what water's like, they're like, I think this is a pretty safe environment, because that, you know, that just might be all they know, and so you could be surveying them and think, oh man, we're doing super well here. Great organizations, really smart organizations, have employee listening approaches that actually bring in insight from a bunch of different approaches. So there is a survey, yes. But on the other end of the spectrum, a survey is, you know, structured hypothesis testing way of getting insight. On the other end of the spectrum is empathetic research, and that's qualitative. Grounded theory research is actually 100% focused on trying to discover things by putting people, individuals or group of people, in this bubble of psychological safety, and working with an expert facilitator or researcher, allowing them to describe their experiences in the organization. You're not asking them to be experts on things. You're not saying, what's the psychological safety like here? Or what's the culture like? Or what are our values? Because no one knows the answer to those things. But you can talk to them about things like, you know, what's the most amazing day you've had in the last month? Or what's the worst day? Or what's going on inside of you when this happens or this happens? So people are they're experts in their own experiences. So the research approach is about creating this safe environment and constructing a conversation through workshops or interviews or different things like that to get people to express what they're going through on a day-to-day basis. And so an expert researcher can hear that and pull those themes out to really understand what's going on in a culture. So they'll start to really understand deeply things like safety, trust, purpose orientation, what the value system is, what people care about. And that's a whole different, when you put those together, you know, with the efficiency and breadth of survey tools and the depth and clarity of that empathetic qualitative research, you start to get this really clear picture. So Samir, that's a super long answer, but at an enterprise level, at a system level, it's about developing a really sound employee listening strategy, a muscle in the organization where you're always listening. And those are the two poles. You also want to, you know, we have career coaches or other organizations of performance managers, different things like, there's a network of insight that you should be pulling, you know, evidence from there. And there's a whole bunch of things like that, that you're pulling data and evidence and insight and constantly looking at how these things come together to really understand that at a system level.
So one question we love to ask all of our folks that we interview here on the podcast is, knowing what you know now, if you were to start your career over again, what EQ skill, so what emotional intelligence skill would you say you've personally used that's helped you the most to build and lead strong teams?
What I think's helped me the most is, so my background is engineering, which is weird. nothing wrong with engineering, but like, I just, you know, it's, you know how it happens. Like you end up in university following the best mark you got in high school, which is a function of who was the best teacher. It has nothing to do with what career you should be in. And I actually really enjoyed engineering. I really enjoyed it, but I don't think it's really my life calling. My father came up through the trades. And all through my life, he's so values oriented and just such a wonderful human. And I just learned from him this whole thing about humility and how I entered engineering school already knowing that there's this high risk that engineers come out thinking they know everything and how obnoxious and off-putting that is. So I was, this idea of active humility was encoded in me through my whole life from my father. And I saw that coming out with my peers coming out of engineering school and going to these environments. And, you know, you're sitting talking to a tradesperson who's been doing their job for 20 years and they know so much more, but I'm an engineer and I'm whatever, you know? And so my father gave me the decoder ring to see that in action and see how just ineffective it is and how alienating it is. And so I think that to me, that was a really big leg up for me. In my early career, I think I avoided a few of the pitfalls that I saw some of my peers take. And so that was really powerful for me. It's a little bit about humility and trying to find a way to keep on the right side of it.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's a great answer. And a lot of self-awareness there too, to be able to recognize that. So,
and clearly, obviously, a strength of your father as well. So, Stephen, we want to thank you immensely. And I do have a feeling that some of the stuff that we've talked about today is going to impact people, listeners, profoundly. And I really look forward to perhaps having another conversation about, you know, some of the other things that we've touched on today. But I'm curious, do you have any parting thoughts that you'd like to say to us or to the audience?
Yeah, I'm just thrilled you're both doing this. You know, and as you and I have known each other for a long, long time, so I couldn't, you are doing something that feels like such a perfect fit for, you know, who I know you to be from my perspective. And Samir, I'm getting to know you. You're a newer friend of mine, but still I get the same, just deep sense of, you know, happiness and it just makes me feel warm inside when people find something they're passionate about that can have such a big impact on other people. So I'm thrilled you're doing this. I've loved listening to every episode you've done. And I just want you to keep going because it's great work and it's a great thing for the world. So I thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Emotional Intelligence Podcast. We hope you found it informative and enjoyable. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on your favorite platform. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more people. If you're interested in learning more about the topics we discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. You can find them by visiting our website. And if you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at info@emotionalintelligence.com or connect with us on social media by using the links in the show notes.